live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
The Democrat leadership has taken their eyes off the ball and is trying to turn this tragedy into another debate about guns.
No one wants terrorists to be able to buy guns or explosives. No one.
Republicans need to put the lives of innocent Americans ahead of the NRA.
I believe we should stop playing political football with something so important.
We should have done it after Sandy Hook. We should have done it after Santa Barbara, after Aurora, but we didn't, so let's do it now.
Amongst the senators you heard testifying was Mitch Foghorn Leghorn McConnell. I'll say, we can't do this now. Just embarrassing. I'm embarrassed for my Republican friends. I'm embarrassed for the senators who turned down four, frankly, weak bills and changes in gun legislation, the most egregious of which was a very simple universal background check because of the incredible burden it would put on you if you had to buy a gun. You could no longer walk into a tent in the middle of nowhere at a gun show and buy a gun without a background check. Well, you know, maybe I'd like you to have a background check. I'm American. You also couldn't buy a gun online without a background check. There's a million people on the terror watch list. Anybody want to guess how many of them are Americans? Because the whole point of not taking on the terror watch list is because Americans should have a right to buy a gun at any time. Okay, so there's a million people on the terror watch list. How many are Americans?
I'm half.
Okay, Dave?
I would say a million. Yeah, I'd say about 600,000.
Okay, Mary?
Going about 400,000.
Steve?
I would say 98% of them are foreign nationals or foreign people, not U.S. citizens.
Not Americans.
0.05% are Americans.
That's what I thought.
Boy.
There are 5,000 Americans out of 1 million people on the terror watch list. And break that down even further, you have to assume that most of the time they're on the terror watch list because they deserve it. Mm-hmm. Because one of the other main pushbacks on the terror watch list argument is, well, there's a lot of people on a watch list that shouldn't be on there, and then they wouldn't be able to buy a gun. So let's say 10% are incorrect. So we're talking about stopping reasonable legislation, just minor legislation for 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of idiocy that's going on in Congress right now. And if it's okay with you, that's fine. It's not okay with me, and we'll get deeper into that later.
But the most basic, just the most basic, the most common sense one is, if you're on the terror watch list, it is called the terror watch list. You shouldn't be able to buy a gun. I think,
I think they're all common sense. You shouldn't be able to buy a gun without
No fly, no buy.
But you shouldn't be able to walk into a tent and buy a gun. You shouldn't be able to go on guns.com or whatever and buy a gun online. It's ridiculous.
You know, after the Murrah Federal Building explosion, we made it harder for people to buy ammonium nitrate, including our farmers, who every time they go buy it, a red light goes off at the FBI. We haven't had one of those explosions since we made that harder.
Have you walked into a Walgreens?
I was just going to say that. Yeah, remember I was telling you the other day.
Try to buy cold meds.
I bought soap, razors, and
you got to call Walgreens guy over with a key to open the case.
For every one of those. For soap. This is this is a bar of soap.
Amazing.
I had to show my driver's license to buy Drano and sign a list.
But if you need a gun, you'd grab one for whatever you need.
That's insane.
It's your constitutional right. Hillary Clinton's going to make a speech today on the economy. It's the only thing that Donald Trump beats her in the polls. Well, I shouldn't say that. He also beats her in the polls on how he would best handle terrorism. Having said that, he's behind in every other poll, and the money story is pretty dramatic. We'll get into this with Pat Brady a little later. Hillary has $23 million spent in the month of, I think this may be April numbers, maybe they're May. $23 million spent. Trump spent about $3 million. About half of that went back to his own companies for rent on Mar-a-Lago and for rent on his jet, things like that. Hillary's got about $47, $48 million in the bank. Trump's got $1 million.
How about that?
It's not good for Donald, who fired his longtime campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, yesterday. The rumors about why he was fired don't necessarily matter. The guy with the Elvis hair is now taking over. Is that actually Elvis or is that
no,
somebody else?
I don't think it's Elvis.
Well, you don't know.
Obviously, he's still in the building.
Yeah. But Corey Lewandowski may have leaked negative stories about Ivanka's husband, who he had some issues with. And he signed a non-disclosure agreement. How do I know that? Because he was still backing Trump yesterday afternoon and last night. And, you know, look, I've been fired a few times. Unless you sign an NDA and get a check, you're pretty much going to go after the people that fired you if somebody asked. I mentioned the polls and the Hillary speech. The Brexit, the British exit of the EU, there's a big debate, Steve, as you were talking about last hour, tonight at Wembley Arena, which is the last big debate before the vote on Thursday. And Tom Rivers from ABC News will join us in about an hour to talk about that. Paul Coit will appear tomorrow. We also have some other people with British accents who will show up.
Somewhere out there is my family. I can't find him on my own.
Hang on, Dory!
Surf's up!
Just keep swimming. Mom! Dad!
Does this mean we have to say goodbye to Dory?
I don't know why I thought I could do this.
Dory, you are about to find your parents. And when you do that, you'll be
home.
Grab your things, I'm going to take you home.
How about there's been 17 Pixar films now? 17. Nick DiGilio joins us. And Nick, on the average, how long does it take to make one of these from conception to finish?
4 years, maybe?
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Three to 4 years, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard 3 to 5 even. And because you've got to do the animation, you got to conceptualize it, you got to find all the producers, all the things you normally do. But then you have to have this team of animators, even though they're working on computers, create every movement, right?
Yeah. It's a pretty meticulous process. The thing about the Pixar movies, for the most part, that set them apart from other computer animated films of the past few years. Pixar has raised the bar. Pixar, not only are they beautifully animated movies, not only are they technically just incredibly well done, but a lot of them are really, really emotional experiences. I mean, I can't tell you the number of Pixar movies. There's probably 4 or 5 Pixar movies that make me cry every time I watch them. And there's just really great characters, really great scripts, really great stories, and really great emotion. That's what sets it apart from, you know, some of the DreamWorks stuff that's come out and some of the other stuff, like your Ice Age movies and things like that. The Pixar at its best is the best animated stuff that's out right now.
So what do you think of Finding Dory?
I liked it. I didn't love it. I liked it. I didn't like it as much as Finding Nemo. But it's really beautifully animated. It has some really funny moments in it. It doesn't quite have the same emotional grab as Finding Nemo. But it gets to the point where it's like really kind of unfair to continually compare these movies to other Pixar movies, like I said, because the bar is raised so high. But the thing made $137 million over the weekend, the single highest grossing animated weekend box office of all time.
I ran into two adult couples, friends, who both went to see it. Loved it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the reason is because Pixar makes movies for grown-ups as well. Yeah. It's the same movie your kid's going to love, but going to love for different reasons.
Exactly right. And that's one of the many things that makes Pixar so special, you know?
So I'm looking at the list of the biggest Pixar films, or all the Pixar films, I should
all
say.
All of the Pixar films, yeah.
Yeah. And
I've made my list. I put mine in order of the ones in how I liked.
The ones you liked. All right. Well, let me just tell you that here's a few I'd forgotten about. I'd forgotten about A Bug's Life. I'd forgotten about Ratatouille.
Yep.
I'd forgotten about Brave, and I'd forgotten about The Good Dinosaur. Were those weaker on your list, or were those pretty strong?
A Bug's Life is number 2 on my list. Okay. A Bug's Life is one of my favorites. Good Dinosaur, we came out just this past Thanksgiving, and it was pretty forgettable, not one of the best Pixar movies. I'm not a big fan of Ratatouille, but a lot of people really love that movie. And Brave was kind of underwhelming. You know, those are the ones that you mentioned. So with the exception of A Bug's Life, which I personally love, the other ones are not the strongest ones.
Give me a top 10.
Number 1, without question.
No, really. Number 10.
Oh, number 10.
You ever done a list 10? Before? Number 10, come on.
Okay, sorry. All right, number 10 is Finding Dory.
Finding Dory, okay.
Yep. Number 9 is, where is number 9? Number 9 is Monsters, Inc.
Funny movie.
Great movie, yep. Number 8 is Finding Nemo.
Really? Number 8? I would have thought that would have been higher. Who thought Nick would have had Nemo higher?
Me. I thought Dory would have been higher.
Number 7?
Toy Story 2.
Well, you know, they say since Godfather 2, it's the greatest sequel.
It's up there, man. It's a great sequel.
Six?
Number six is Up, which
it's a great
I defy anyone to watch the first 10 minutes of that movie and not bawl your eyes out every time.
It's a great movie. I wanted to find the little old guy and just tell him everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And by the way, the greatest dog scene in any movie ever, all I wanted to see was the trailer forever. Squirrel!
Yeah. Squirrel. Yeah.
Five?
The Incredibles, which is, you know, counting even all live-action movies, one of the most exciting action-adventure films ever made.
And a great spoof of superhero movies before its time.
Absolutely. It's a terrific movie.
Four?
Toy Story, the original Toy Story.
Oh, that would have been number one for me.
Yeah.
Because it was so groundbreaking.
Me too. It was really good.
It's so great. So yeah. Great. Three.
Inside Out from last year. Another movie that I defy people not to... Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, something just happened. Something crazy just happened with my phone, but that's okay.
The government is listening.
To watch Inside Out and not bawl your eyes out. Another incredible movie, especially if you have daughters. I don't have a daughter, but if I'm assuming that someone you know
that sounds like me. Yeah. I agree with it. Very, very sweet, sweet film and a nice message movie. Two.
Yep. A Buzz Life. I know I'm in the minority on it, but it's still, I adore that movie. I really do. And not a lot of people are with me on that one, very high on the list.
I'm looking now, trying to figure out what's your number one of, WALL-E. WALL-E's got to be number one.
Number one is WALL-E, without question.
Yeah.
Just a masterpiece. And then you look at some of the other ones that are on the list. I mean, they're still like the weakest movie. I think the worst movie that they've made is Cars 2.
Mm-hmm.
Is the weakest. And I didn't like Cars very much.
It's funny, though, right? When you see like stars make a bad movie and you go, well, somebody needed a paycheck. In Pixar's case, if they phone it in, it's still 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Actually, absolutely right, man. Absolutely right. Yeah.
So,
and you know what? Pixar phoning it in is better than most movies.
Yeah, without a doubt. And again, you can see this as an adult. You can see it as a kid. Well, as a matter of fact, Sandberg, you just sat down. Did you take your kids to this?
Yes.
And?
They liked it.
Yeah. You didn't like it?
No, it was fine. I'm not... I don't.
You don't like the Pixar stuff?
Yeah, I'm not a huge movie person, so...
Well, then you and Nick should get along great.
I know, but... You mentioned Cars, and I have a funny story that when I took the kids to see the 25th anniversary of Home Alone in the theater when it ran here, you know, and they thought it was so cool because they've always seen Home Alone. But then Patrick, who's 9, said, "Do you think in 25 years they're going to do Cars in the theater?" Like, because he loves the movie Cars.
Right. So he'd like to come back as a 35-year-old.
Right, to go see Cars.
Oh, well, what a sweet thing to plan that far ahead.
I know. It was cute. His little brain, you know, it was like.
Can tell he lives with you if he's that organized.
Yeah.
Have you taken your god kids to any of these Pixar
movies? No, we were going to see Dory this week, but what was really cute is that my cousin got a new pool, and the lining of the pool, you playing some music? Some music under my review.
My phone's apparently going off.
Steve, when you're on the air, you should put it on silent or vibrate. But anyway, so my cousin got a new pool, and the lining is all the fish, and the kids thought it was so cool. They're like, "There's Nemo, there's Dory," and I'm going, "Who's Dory? Oh wait, Dory. Yeah, I don't see a lot of those."
Well, no, but Nick's here to tell you that you should see all the Pixar movies.
I know, I'm going to. David hasn't seen a bunch either. We should have movie night, Dave.
Oh, can I go too? Because I've missed a ton of them, and I have kids.
Yeah.
Nick,
I suggest WALL-E. You guys should start with WALL-E.
You're going to do WALL-E on one of your movie nights?
I would love to. I would love to.
There you go.
Cool.
Yeah, we're doing a very special movie at my next one, you guys.
What is it?
As you know.
Airplane.
Oh, yeah. What's the date again? Because I wrote it down. I forgot already.
July 12th.
July 12th. Get your tickets.
Yeah.
Allegedly, everybody on this show will be there.
I'll be on vacation.
Allegedly.
I'm on vacation.
Keyword allegedly. So.
All right, buddy. Enjoy the day.
Thanks, buddy.
That's Nick DiGilio and Nick D. And tonight, of course, he's going to be back at 2 a.m. So that's when you should listen to him because that's when he's on. Unless you're like at his house and you can listen to him anytime.
Is he still on the line? Don't we have a golf outing that day?
Yeah, there's a golf outing that day.
I think all three of us
are
playing a golf outing that day.
We're all playing a golf outing that day.
Yeah, and then we go straight to his deal.
Oh, yeah, and then we go to the movie. You're right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
Where's the golf outing? Isn't it north?
Yes.
Yeah, so we go straight to his deal.
You're not emceeing the dinner, are you?
No.
Okay,
no.
Good. That's always a factor.
So there you go. All right, I think we're all set. 6:29. We're back after this with a big story on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents The Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
Kid of the Week. If you know a kid doing it, getting it done. We need more positive news about kids. And we'd love to hear from you. Go to WGNradio.com/contest. Submit an entry for a kid between 5 and 18 that you think ought to be Kid of the Week. And we announce the winner every week, every Tuesday morning at this time. And in December, we choose a Kid of the Year from all of the 2016 Kid of the Week winners for 5,000 big ones. Go online to WGNradio.com/contest to submit your entry. All right, 6:39, and standing by on the phone is Reese. Before I get to Reese, let me get to Reese's story. There's an individual who works for South Elgin Parks and Creation for like 20 years. One of the projects this person worked hard for was the development of an inclusive playground and providing an atmosphere where kids with special needs could play and not be subject to any sort of issues, other than what they deal with every day. This person now works for Carroll Stream Park District, but out in South Elgin, they raise funds for the project. And obviously, anytime you're doing something like that, where you're raising money for a park or whatever the case may be, you need community help. So one day, as this individual came home from a day at work and a lot of meetings, pulled down the street, and there was Reese with a lemonade stand. I assume you guys have all seen lemonade stands. They're up again for the year.
I love lemonade stands.
It's tough to drive by one, man. There's been a couple times this year. I'm a soft touch anyway for this stuff. But there's a couple times where you're late for something. Yeah, I have been.
You have to stop.
And I couldn't. There were a couple kids. I just threw a 20 out the window. But you got to make sure you get it, you know, into their lemonade stand and not on the street. But kids popping up with their lemonade stands everywhere. So if you can't stop and, you know, overpay. So anyway, Reese has a lemonade stand, right? And this individual pulls down the street and Reese is there and the person buys some lemonade and asks Reese what the money was going for. And her response was, well, to your park, Mr. Jim.
Oh.
Come on.
That's cool.
So Reese, by the way, raised $72.35 to help the park, which is pretty cool. Good morning, Reese. How are you?
Good.
How old are you now?
10 and a half.
Oh, so we're probably talking about when you were little.
It was probably like 3 years ago. Yeah, 3 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, 3 years ago. That's ancient history, isn't it? So 10 and a half, what is that, fourth grade? Fifth grade.
Fifth grade.
And you're going into sixth grade?
Fifth.
Oh, you're going into fifth. Okay, I got it. What's your big plan for the summer? You going to do anything fun? Who's feeding you answers? Reese, you can talk to me. Tell your writer to hold on. You just talk to me. So what do you do? What are you doing this summer?
Right now I'm in South Dakota, in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
And you're in Sioux Falls, South Dakota because you got lost coming home, or what's going on?
We're on vacation.
Oh, okay. Well, who do you know in South Dakota? You got family there, I guess, probably, right?
We're surrounded by friends' family.
Oh. Probably Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
But they're going to take a look at that.
Are you going to Mount Rushmore?
Yes.
Do you know whose faces are on Mount Rushmore? Because I'll tell you, so you'll be a big shot, you'll know, and you can tell the other people when you're there. You got your Teddy Roosevelt. Does this person go to school with you and feed you the answers as well?
That's my sister. That's two of my sisters.
All right, sisters, calm down for a second. So you got FDR, you got Teddy Roosevelt, you got who else?
George Washington.
And? Judge Judy.
No,
Judge Judy. Don't
tell her that. Yeah, tell Judge her. Judy. Tell her the former governor of the state of Illinois.
Rod Blagojevich.
No, Rod Blagojevich is not on Mount Rushmore. Dear God. Unless they're going to see for it.
Reese, that's a cool story about the lemonade stand. $72. Nicely done by you. Did your sisters help you?
No. Yes.
I don't know why. I don't know why they wouldn't. They help you with everything else. And are they older sisters or younger sisters?
Two younger and one older.
Four girls. What a bunch of knuckleheads you guys must be.
So, tell me about it, Steve.
Poor dad.
That's Dad, who hasn't used an indoor bathroom since all four girls were born.
Right. Wait till they start dating, Dad.
Oh, now you're going to kill the poor man.
Sorry.
Stop it. So, Reese, I don't know if I asked you this. What do you want to be when you grow up?
A teacher.
What are you going to teach?
Fourth or fifth grade.
Oh, so like the kids now, that what you know. You're going to teach fourth or fifth grade?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's the best thing about being 10 years old?
I'm almost to middle school, so nice. I can be out of elementary school.
Right. Right. You're moving on. Obviously, you're moving on. Well, listen, I like talking to you and your sisters. You want to name them since they were on the show with you?
Kennedy is in... going into third grade, and then the youngest is Riley, and she's going to second grade, and the oldest is Delaney. She's going into eighth grade.
Hey, Dad, those are great names.
Oh, thank you. It was my wife's idea.
Of course it was. Well, congratulations, Dad. You got a beautiful family, obviously, and Reese, you're a kick. I like having you on the show. Would you like some prizes for being a great kid?
Yes.
Will you promise to share them with your goofy sisters? Promise?
Maybe.
Promise?
Yes.
All right. I got a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for you. You can get pizza for the family when you get back, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay, good. I also have an App gift card, so you can get a new pair of headphones or something from App. That's abt.com. Or you can get some for your dad, because he seems like a nice guy.
That's
not
like a good idea, Steve.
Yeah. No, she's going to get something for herself.
Yeah, you could do that. And also,
she had
a great laugh. Sounds like a bottle that laugh. And a family pack of four tickets, Dad, to Lyle's Eyes in the Skies Festival for the big balloon fest. We're going to be out there for one of our Hometown Voices tours. You can take the family out there. All right, hold on, you people. We'll come back 6:45. That's your kid of the week. That little kid giggle is the best.
Oh, she's awesome. Great.
Just the best.
Great.
Pat Brady will join us in a little bit. Pat was part of the conference call on Sunday night with 1,000 people. Now all 1,000 didn't speak. But this is a conference call of people who are delegates to the convention in Cleveland in a couple of weeks. And the discussion was, are you just going to give the election to Hillary Clinton? Are you going to do something about Donald Trump's candidacy? And if possible, release all of the delegates to vote their conscience. If trends matter in politics, and they do, it's been a very bad 3 weeks for the Trumpster. And trends being what they are, if the trend were to continue going into the convention and every delegate could vote the way they want, you can guarantee yourself a lot would change their mind. Now, would that bring him below the 1237 number he needs? Possibly. And if that's the case, then he'd have a second ballot, third ballot, fourth ballot, fifth ballot. But again, the great nonsense of this is, okay, what's your other option? Who's the backup plan? You've had months to come up with an alternative to Trump. You've had a couple of months now since Trump wrapped it up to come up with an alternative to Trump. And nobody's got one.
No.
Nobody's stepping up to run. Paul Ryan's not going to run. Nobody's going to run. So you get what you ask for, and Trump is the candidate, unless somebody comes out of the woodwork that we're not aware of, that is prepared to step up, take the heat, and be the individual. Now, this is not unprecedented. The unprecedented part would be the rules change, the dramatic rules change to pull it from somebody who got as many votes as Trump got. However, I mean, as recently as Hubert Humphrey in 1968, who didn't run in a single primary, he jumped in at the last minute. So, you know, you suppose somebody could jump in. But again, who? Who?
I don't know. And then the people who are still on this Kasich bandwagon, that ship has sailed too.
Well, anybody that was already in, the idea that they would be the candidate. I mean, you know, look at it this way. Try to make a case for Jeb Bush now.
Oh,
not that Jeb Bush wants it, but no. You know, it's not going to happen.
You're right. It's almost like the damage has been done, you know.
So.
Move forward. Find somebody else.
Jake just brought up a good point. Why don't we make this a text question for the rest of the show? If not Trump, who? 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 If Trump leaves a race, or if Trump is removed as the candidate, who would you run in his place?
You know who we're.
So it'd be Hillary versus.
You know what's we're going to get a lot of. I'm going to predict right now, Big O.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, big O, tanned, rested, and ready.
Yeah.
CNN reporting this morning that third-party candidates, specifically Gary Johnson and William Weld, and also the Green Party candidate, I forget her name, I'm sorry, but I can't think of her name off the top of my head, are pulling as much as 16% nationwide. 16% is a huge number. The question is, who do they harm? 657, Pat Brady joins all of this coming up. This is 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
We are affected by this, and frankly, we're affected by it whether we're in the European Union or out of it. And it is important that we play our part to deal with it. But my argument is, obviously, being inside the European Union helps us to make these arguments about a more effective response. I think in the end, our economic interest is such that we should stay in this organisation. And I've been true to my word. Best outcome for us was for Britain to stay in a reformed European Union.
7-Eleven, the argument for is because you can control the greater good of all of Europe by being a part of it and being arguably the strongest part of the European Union. The argument against is we were the British Empire. We go it alone. And on top of that, we're throwing money away. We're giving money away. And we don't have much to give away. The Queen needs more. Tom Rivers is on the line live from London and ABC News. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. Good morning. Yeah, it is contentious. It is on a knife edge. And it sounds like a cliche, but the polls show this thing has kind of been vacillating around the 50-50 mark, and maybe a slight edge now toward the Remain in the EU camp, but it is going to be close. 13% of the people still, at this stage of the game, 2 days out, don't know which way to go.
Well, that's obviously the swing in a tight race. Who's doing a better job of campaigning for their side?
The emotion really is with the Leave camp. The passion is there. The heads are basically telling people stick with what you got because the unknown opens a whole raft of issues. No longer are you with the EU club, with all of the bureaucracy, but also the rules, the treaties. You have to cut new ones. You got to cut 27 new ones with every single country in Europe. Going to take time. So we'll see where it goes. And as you said at the top, staying in the club costs money, something to the tune of something like $350 million each week goes from London to Brussels. And those are not elected officials controlling that money. That money can go wherever it wants to go within the 28-country group.
All the deadbeat uncles have their hand out right now in Europe, and that's going to be that way for a while. And I think that maybe could swing the vote in that direction. Say hi to Tom, your old friend.
Tom, how are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Nice to talk to you. All right, so are the royals weighing in on this openly?
I mean, no.
Okay. They're staying completely out of it. Oh,
and people have been watching. Any little slip, any little part of a syllable, they will jump on, but they can't. They have to be above it all. There were some indications that maybe the Queen wanted, through a remark that she threw out a couple of months ago, that maybe she wanted to get out of Europe. But again, the royal sources say that was misinterpreted. So they're the referees on the field. They don't want to say anything.
We have a stake in this mainly economically?
Well, Washington does. The average man on the street, probably no. If the country votes to get out, and that's the deal, people are going to fly over and see Buckingham Palace as per usual. But the government wants to cut this deal, as you well know, sometime by the end of this year, the U.S. and European trade deal. And if Britain's out of that, that does not help things at all. And, of course, you got other factors, too. It's security. Washington wants to pick up the phone and use Britain as their door into all of Europe. If Britain says no, then that's going to complicate things. They got to call London. They also have to call Brussels. So it's muddy in that regard. Big business as well wants the UK to stick in the EU because they feel they can make more money that way. And also they know the lay of the land. They know how it works.
Pat Brady, say hi to Tom Rivers, ABC News in London.
Hey, Tom, I saw in People magazine Prince Harry's moving to the United States. Is that because of this vote?
wait, he's moving now?
I saw it in People magazine.
If Trump wins, we're moving back.
The people is gold.
The tabloids love Harry, as you well know. And he's kind of grown. You know, he had a rocky few years, but he's kind of grown into an interesting character. Probably one of the more interesting Royals. And yeah, every week here you figure out who he's going with, going out with, et cetera, et cetera. So take it with a grain of salt.
Scotland had a huge turnout to decide whether or not they would go independent. Do you expect the same sort of numbers by percentage on Thursday?
I think it's going to be pretty high. Now think back to that vote. Now if for instance the Leave campaign wins, on the back of that, you can be sure that Scotland's going to say, we're going to have another referendum now because we want to stay in Europe.
Right.
So they're going to say, we can leave, but Scotland wants to stay, and that has to be renegotiated individually. It's a mess. It really is a mess.
Scotland can say, we don't have as much money, but we got great golf courses if anybody wants to come play.
Yeah.
Pat?
What is the effective tax rate in the UK? Do you know?
It's graduated. It's big. It's a little bit slightly, let's put it this way, slightly higher than probably the U.S. tax rate. But having said that, and you've probably heard this a million times, if you guys come on over and you slip on a banana peel and break your leg, you'll get first-class service. You'll get your leg fixed, and it won't cost you a penny. It won't cost you a buck to get fixed. So,
right.
It's almost like you're paying in to National Health Service every single month with your paycheck, whether you use it or not. And as a tourist, you get that benefit as well.
Thank you, Tom. We appreciate it. And good luck. It's going to be a busy week.
It's going to be a good one, guys. It's so close. Keep watching it Thursday.
All right. Thanks, man. 717. That's Tom Rivers live in London. Tom's been in London now for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't got a whiff of the accent, does he?
Not at all.
Still got that Texas or wherever he's from in there?
Although I have a friend who I graduated with, born in Illinois, went to the University of Illinois, moved to London right out of college, and now has a beautiful British accent.
Fraud. It's 717. Back with Pat Brady in a second on 720 WGN.
I have a wonderful guy, a campaign manager. You talk about discipline, and you probably saw what happened today with my campaign. He's a good guy, Corey. And by the way, the easiest thing, Corey, you're fired. I can't do that. Can't do it.
What did Corey Lewandowski do? What did he do wrong?
It would be so easy for me to terminate this man, ruin his life, ruin his family. He's got four beautiful children in New Hampshire, okay? I fired many people, especially in The Apprentice.
I know it would be very easy for me to discard people. I don't discard people. I stick by people, and I know it's probably not even politically good for me to do, but when somebody is maligned so unfairly as that, I will stick by.
Corey, good job, Corey. Good job. You're fired.
Hey, Corey, can I see you back in the office for a second? Escorted out of Trump Tower by security. Wow. So what went wrong? How did this beautiful relationship end?
I think if I walked into Trump Tower, I might get the same treatment.
You and I both, my
friend.
The rumors are that he tried to leak a negative story about Trump's son-in-law, Ivanka's husband, and they found out about it. The additional rumors are that he was called in and given a list of things that were failing in the campaign, this one probably more likely. And Trump asked him what he was going to do about the vice presidential list, and he had some idea of leaking a story then. Trump, unimpressed, then said, we got to make a change. Look, it probably all comes down to the same thing. The guy that looks like Elvis, what's his name, the guy that came in, the other campaign guy?
Manafort.
Yeah, Manafort. Manafort has wanted Corey Lewandowski out, and I think he finally got his way.
Well, Lewandowski's never run a campaign.
Right.
So it makes sense. And the RNC's argument is that this is a good thing. It's the campaign's maturing. They're getting ready for the general. But if you look today, Ben Carson's campaign has more in its war chest financially than Donald Trump.
You're not
does.
Kidding about that.
No, it's in today. He's got $1 million. And Hillary Clinton will raise $1 billion. We're 4 weeks out from the convention. He just fires his campaign manager, and they're essentially broke.
Well, and you have the juxtaposition of him calling the media cheats, liars, and horrible people. And it ain't so cute anymore. So now he's not getting all the free pub he used to got. I mentioned this the other day. I have friends at CNN who I've spoken to who said they call the newsroom every day. Would you like Mr. Trump this morning? Would you like Mr. Trump this afternoon? Would you like Mr. Trump tonight? And they're not bending over to take every interview with him. Obviously, MSNBC isn't either, but neither is Fox. Fox is hitting him hard. So if he doesn't get the free publicity and he doesn't have any money, how does he get whatever message he has today out?
Well, he doesn't. And that's why there's the push now to change the rule or amend the rules of the Republican National Committee to allow the delegates, the 2,400 delegates, to vote their conscience, because their obligation as delegates is to put somebody up that can actually win. And right now he's 15 down. He's down in all the states he thinks he needs to win, the Rust Belt states he thinks he's going to win and to win the presidency, but it's not happening. It's been a disaster since he won the nomination.
Most folks rightfully don't understand this because they wouldn't, but the RNC is a private club. It's a club that can make up its own rules and handle things the way they want. Having said that, when 13 million people voted, they voted for Trump. And even though that number is irrelevant, it's relevant in that they express their view in the world's greatest democracy. How do you negate all their votes?
Well, you're right. They did. There are 13 and a half million people that actually voted for him. But there's no real substantive change to the rules here. It's always been the process that the Rules Committee meets before the convention. The same thing happened in 1976 with Ronald Reagan and Gerald Ford. And the delegates have always, historically, I believe, and I've read the history on it, have an obligation to vote for the candidate they think they can win. And all the Rules Committee, which meets right before the convention, needs to do is just amend the rules a little bit and say delegates are free to vote their conscience. And in a situation like this where we have a disastrous candidate, I think it's entirely reasonable for the committee to do that. And that's what we're going to do, trying to do.
So there's maybe 1,500 delegates who are committed to Trump now.
A little shy. Well, right about 14. I think there's 150 that are uncommitted. So he's right on the bubble. He's over it, but it wouldn't take that big a shift.
Right. So 1,237 is the number. If you released all 1,400 to vote their conscience, you could easily say 10% are going to go away.
Well,
that drops him below 1,237, and that takes it to a second ballot and maybe beyond. But then it comes to the other thing, because I want to ask about the conference call as well. Then who?
Well, this is, I think you need to take it step by step. And if this gains momentum like it has in the last 10 days and continues to gain that momentum in the next week, I think you'll see people actually stepping up to the plate. There are a lot of great candidates that could do it.
Like?
A lot of the people that ran. I mean, Paul Ryan, obviously, who said he wouldn't do it. But the difference this time is the Democratic National Committee has no campaign structure. It's all about Hillary. So mm-hmm. She owns it. With the Republicans this time, and Reince Priebus has done a great job in the last 8 years, we have a campaign infrastructure in place. So you just put a good candidate at the top of it, and you'd have a pretty good campaign. So,
but you got to have somebody that wants to do it. And wouldn't they have stepped up before now?
Well, not yet. Yep, we're still not to the convention, and it would be risky. And I think Paul Ryan says it best, I don't want to divide the party, but if the party makes the decision that we're going to allow this to go to the floor, then somebody will step up. I can't believe
it. Do you think he would allow himself to be drafted that way?
I don't know. I would hope so. I think he would be our best candidate, if not for John Kasich or some of the other people that ran. But there are good Republicans, a lot better than this fake Republican that we've nominated.
All right, let me frighten you. What if Ted Cruz is the pick?
That is frightening.
Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, be careful what you ask for, but we'll wait and see what happens. But Ted Cruz would lose too, I think. But I think he mm-hmm. is a better up. To me, Trump is scary if he even gets close to it, just because the positions he's taken, he does so much damage to the brand.
Ted Cruz and Trump, you know, either or, it's like a 2.5 men episode. Do you want wimpy John Cryer or do you want the lunatic?
Yeah, it's a scary choice. But to me, right now, and this is how weak Cruz is. When the option came down to Trump or Cruz, and Cruz really had a clear path, everyone said, "Well, we're not going to vote for Cruz either."
Right. So, of all the egomaniacal, narcissistic types that want to be president, the one that jumps to the forefront who would go pick me would be Ted Cruz.
Yeah, but I think calmer heads could prevail at the convention when you get the people have been around controlling things. But the bottom line to me is, and the reason I think this is so important, it's necessary to have a good, strong Republican Party. And the party's done a lot of good in this country from the fiscal policy, economic policy. We had some great Abraham Lincoln, Everett Dirksen, civil rights movement, Ronald Reagan, who basically ended communism. So we have a lot that we can stand on. But right now we have a guy at the top of the ticket that doesn't represent any of those values. And he really not only hurts our chances of the presidency, it hurts the rest of the ticket.
Can you hang around for a bit?
Sure.
Because we need you for another segment to talk about the conference call. Because I don't want you to think about, because my concern for the Republican Party would be this. All of the future stars of the Republican Party are young. That's a good thing.
Yes.
But because they're young, they're also relatively unknown. You got some great governors and people that don't have the time to run against Hillary Clinton, who has global recognition, to get that kind of name recognition. So who is the person who has Mitt Romney-like name recognition but is also somebody who you believe could compete at a higher level? That's the question.
Orion Samus.
Orion's tan, rested and ready.
Yeah. I love that slogan, too.
Back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
7:41, more with Pat Brady coming up. On Sunday, it is the Pride Parade. which we are happily involved in again. And Richard Pfeiffer is a security coordinator, logistics coordinator, a coordinator. And joins us now to talk about it a little bit. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
You're the all-around coordinator. You coordinate coordination.
Well, actually, I'm the parade coordinator.
All right, good.
My title.
All right, so security is something that's a relevant topic to discuss, unfortunately, but more relevant now probably in the wake of Orlando. Is the city stepping it up? What do we need to know, and what do people need to know that it's perfectly safe to come out?
Oh, sure. At the press conference the other day, we had, you know, most of the city departments that, you know, plug into city parades were there, and they promised, you know, a full coterie, I guess is the term, of police officers and security at the parade. We have extra security. So, you know, we're planning on a safe event, knock on wood, no rain. And we've been lucky with that over the years. But, you know, the city's ready for it. We're ready for it. The LGBTQ communities, we're ready for Sunday.
Richard, one of the coolest things about the Pride Parade is the number of entries. There's so many floats, so many bands. But that number is gone down this year on purpose, right? There were fewer entries this year?
There were, yeah. We had 215 last year. We went down to 160 this year, just to tighten up the parade a little bit. The city parade rules say that all city parades should be 2 hours and 15 minutes. Now, that doesn't mean by the time, you know, the floats and everything get to the end of the parade route, that's when the last entry in every city parade crosses the front of the parade. Now, depending on the size of the parade in the city, sometimes they go 3 hours or even more than that. But that's kind of like the guidelines that the city likes parades to do. Large traditional parades, though, it's written into the ordinance, can go on a little bit longer than that. They allow, you know, the larger parades in the city to be a little bit longer.
And going into Sunday, what are you telling people who want to come down? I mean, obviously, you know, try not to park along the route. You're better off grabbing a train, park away from it, all of that. But any special instructions this year?
Well, just, you know, like any public event that you go to nowadays, whether it's a public concert or a festival, you always have to be on the lookout. You know, after 9/11 or after Boston, look, you know, strange, their packages are sitting there. I mean, that's something you keep an eye on. I mean, I do that when I walk into a restaurant. You kind of look to see where the exits are. We live in a really dangerous world now where people have to be prepped for that. But we don't foresee anything along the parade route. We've asked people to take public transportation to come to the parade. There's not a lot of parking opportunities in what the city calls the impacted area. That means up to, you know, 7-8 blocks around the parade route. They guesstimate that there's 1 million people. Now, you can't fit, you know, 1 million people along the 21-block parade route, but there's, you know, a heck of a lot of people there. So we tell people to take public transit when they're coming to the parade.
Are there any other restrictions we should know about, Richard? I know they've kind of cut back on the drinking and how early you can get there. Anything of that we should know about?
Oh, sure. Well, last year we started, there's going to be points along the parade route, and we have security people there, and we have Chicago police officers there. If people are coming with open alcohol, they will be stopped and forced to, you know, throw in barrels there. They can also get up to a $1,000 or more ticket. The city changed that about 2 years ago. Ordinances for public urination or drinking at any public event in the city, and it applies to the Pride Parade. So there will be those points along the parade route. So we tell people not to bring any open alcohol, you know, to the parade, or you will be stopped.
Good luck on Sunday. We'll see you out there, and thanks for all the work you guys are doing.
Okay, well, we appreciate you touching base with us and having the opportunity to let, you know, your listeners...
come on down. Have a good time.
Yeah, you're right.
All the best. Thanks. That's Richard Pfeiffer, parade coordinator.
And don't throw all your beads away so fast this time.
I think that's a life lesson for all of us.
That's funny.
You know, I stopped smoking marijuana. My whole thing in life is health and wellness, but with the legalization of marijuana now, you have edible products. And I haven't had a drink of alcohol in 29 years. And hey, when it comes to admitting that as recently as a couple of months ago, I had some edibles, I hope people take that as I'm a transparent guy. I'm going to tell the truth in this whole process. And so truth and integrity as president of the United States, I think, are really tantamount to decision making.
Well, so much for the Libertarian Party. Gary Johnson, you guys turned out to be a goofball.
Yeah, I thought Bill Weld, his running mate, if he could would have been at the top of the ticket, the former Massachusetts governor, might have been a little more credible candidate.
Now, having said that, both of them with executive experience and wins in their governor's careers.
Weld in Massachusetts, too.
He was a good governor.
Yeah, good governor.
Yeah. And Johnson did a nice job in New Mexico. It's a different challenge, but did a good job.
Yeah, so, Weld was U.S. attorney there, too.
So they do a they would do a good job, but you got to be smarter than to go, so I had some edible pot.
Yesterday. I haven't had a drink in 29 years.
You know, we don't need transparency on everything. It's 7:51. All right, you were
That's a long way from Bill Clinton I didn't inhale, though, don't you think, in our lifetime?
Yeah, well, you know, these times they are changing. At 7:51, as a Kasich delegate, you were elected to that. You were on a conference call with 1,000 other people the other day. Now, to get 1,000 people to get on the conference call, all these folks are delegates, right?
No. They think about 350 of them were delegates. These are activists that want the same thing that I want, the rules to be amended. And but the big news is it went from 35 last Sunday to 1,000 this Sunday.
All right. So 1,000 people on this conference call. Who talked?
The leaders of the movement. There's three or four of these movements that are trying to get these rules amended. This is one of them. This is probably the one that's the best organized. They're very, very organized.
Are they more about I hate Trump or more about we have no shot to win if it is Trump?
Well, I think I hate Trump.
Because those are two different things.
Well, I think on this call, the message was we don't believe he's a Republican, let alone a conservative. Mm-hmm. And if you look at his policy positions on anything, he doesn't represent the Republican Party anywhere, whether it's foreign policy, national security, trade, economic policy, tax policy. He thinks health care is an entitlement mm-hmm. in the United States. So he's way off the reservation on policy. That's where most of these people were that were speaking.
Yeah, he doesn't understand any of the issues. I mean,
no.
He really doesn't.
And he doesn't understand
that's not
the history
me shooting at him. He doesn't.
Or the history of the party.
Right. All right. So when the Rules Committee gets together, how far in advance of Cleveland is that? Same week?
The week before, yeah.
Okay, so the week before. And it's at that point they discuss any changes in the rules going forward for the nomination that coming week.
Yes.
And they did this 4 years ago.
They do it every 4 years. They've been doing it for 100 years.
And right, but 4 years ago they did the Ron Paul rule.
Right.
So, for instance, the Ron Paul rule, I think, said you had to compete. And
you had to have won 8 states to actually win the nomination because they didn't want Ron Paul's name being submitted into nomination and get it in front of the delegates.
All right, so you understand why people who don't swim in this pool would feel like this is subverting the process.
Totally understand it. But the reality is the history of how we selected our nominees, it's completely consistent with that. And when you have a nominee that's going to get creamed and probably take the rest of the ticket down with him, I think delegates have an obligation to at least have the opportunity to vote their conscience. And that's what the amendment's all about. And that's actually the language they want.
The voting of their conscience, would that stick for future races or every 4 years they can be amended differently?
These rules are changed every 4 years.
So in the same way that the Democrat superdelegate thing was a great way to block Bernie, if people want to get involved and have a say in this, they got to get involved, right?
Right. There's 112 people on this committee. You need 57 votes to get the proposition in front of the whole 2,400 delegates. I know this is way into the weeds, but this is how it's worked forever. So this is not any big radical change. And I get people's anger and the reason they voted for Trump about the way the country's gone. I totally understand it. But to put this guy up who's proven to be completely incompetent, I give Senator Kirk credit for pointing out not ready to be commander-in-chief. Well, we got to do something different.
Well, and here's the bottom line. If you're free to vote your conscience, you can still vote for Trump.
Sure.
So if you're elected as a Trump delegate, you can still do that. So if you're one of the 13.5 million and you know your local Trump delegate, you could certainly try to put pressure on them to do that.
Yeah, you can. The thing is, in Donald Trump, for all of his supposed organizational abilities, and he's a businessman and get things done, he hasn't done anything on the campaign side of it. This is hand-to-hand combat. Now, this is politics 101. He has no organization. So if you can get convinced through an aggressive whip program, 57 people to come your way, we might be able to get this to the floor. It's an uphill climb. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but we're going to give it a shot.
All right, now let's go to the money thing, because you were the first person I'm aware of who called this shot months ago, said he's got no money. He's not going to be able to do this. Was the April or the May report that came out yesterday?
It came out, it's two articles in the Washington Post today. Hillary Clinton, as of the end of May, had $42 million in her campaign account. Donald Trump had $1.3
million. $1.3
million. Yeah, that's not good.
And,
he'd already secured the nomination. Hillary Clinton was fighting with Bernie Sanders.
And of the $3 million he spent in the month of May, half of it went back to his companies and him. He actually, inexplicably, is drawing a salary to run for president, according to the report.
Well, again, there's so many questions just on the fundraising. We haven't seen his tax returns. We don't really know a lot of the policies. But to the broader point, and we talked about this 6-7 months ago, he will not be able to raise money, or he's going to have a very difficult time raising money.
Because
he's going to raise $1 billion.
the Koch brothers are out. He hasn't got the rancher in Wyoming or the rancher in Montana with $1 billion coming his way. All the traditional big check writers are running away from him.
Well, and there is consequences to making statements like he's made about veterans, about women, about Muslims, about immigrants, about Mexicans.
And these
about,
are the consequences.
These are the consequences. The big money people don't want to take the risk. They're business people.
Yeah, they're not going to throw bad money. All right. So having said all of that, as he goes forward, what happened to I'm self-funding and if I have to go it alone, I will? Is this why we're not seeing the tax return?
Maybe it's all a big fat lie.
Yeah.
And maybe he's not worth $10 billion. Maybe it's more like a $500 million.
Well, he could put his own money into the campaign tomorrow. He could put $10 million in.
That's going to do nothing though. This is you got to raise $1 billion now.
I mean, right, but if he really had $10 billion and he really wants to be president,
he could put it in there.
He'd give you $1 billion.
Maybe it was a huge lie. I don't
huge.
Yeah, and by the way, all of the money that he has contributed so far is a loan to the campaign. In other words, he's expecting to be paid back.
Yes, and that's exactly. And now he's changed some of that, but not all of it. But the bigger point is this has been disaster the last month. The time you win the nomination, you're supposed to have great momentum, raise a bunch of money, get your message out, and take a lead. And he's gone backwards.
What happens to the money if the candidate loses? Does he get to keep it?
It depends on, or she?
No, he doesn't get to keep it for personal. You get to keep it in your campaign fund,
and
you can disperse it, or you could use it for a future race up to certain time periods and restrictions.
Yeah, back in the old days in Illinois, you could keep it, but that's all changed.
Of course it wasn't. Yeah. Absolutely not.
Gee.
Now, if Hillary Clinton was not one of the worst candidates ever for office, this would be a blowout beyond blowouts. We still see polls that say Trump is viewed by a majority polled as better on the economy and better on the war on terror. She wins in every other case. But if this was a really strong Democratic candidate without the 54% negative she's carrying as opposed to his 70%, this would be over.
Yes, and as bad as she is, she's still winning in the states that Trump says he's going to win, Pennsylvania, Ohio, whatever. She's been a terrible candidate, my opinion.
No, that's mine as well. So there you go. That's the summation of where we are. It's worst versus worser, depending on your opinion. And the good news is the main third-party candidate, which would be Gary Johnson, he hasn't had any edible pot in at least 24 hours or something.
We will not give up. We're going to take one last shot at this and see what we can do. I think it's worth the fighting for.
When do you go to Cleveland?
I'm going to go a week early now because I got to go to this rules committee. So I'll probably be up and back for that meeting. But we'll be out. You're coming out Sunday, right?
I'll be out Wednesday.
You'll be out Sunday?
At this point, I may move to Cleveland for the duration.
Let's get some golf in over there.
Yeah, we will.
Great to see you. Thanks for hanging around.
Yep, thank you.
And next time you have... So how many are you expecting for the conference call this week?
Hopefully 10,000.
Yeah, I mean, exponentially, if it continues to go up.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, the establishment people are criticizing it, saying it's just a Twitter campaign. It's not. There's money. There's people. And you don't need that much money to lobby 112 people.
All right. And as far as you know, Elvis, as Trump's campaign manager, can't make enough of a difference. And what I'm saying, even if it was actually Elvis at this point, it wouldn't make a difference.
Do you think he listens to anybody?
No, I really don't. No, I do not. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks.
That's Pat Brady. Beautiful young stars with their social media accounts and their 90 million followers, they don't have problems with ID theft. Oh, yes, they do. As a matter of fact, a beautiful young star recently had an 89 million followers social media network account hacked and then started to shoot out social media messages that were awful. And weren't her.
Because it wasn't her, yeah.
No, and beautiful young social media stars don't need that kind of pressure.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, you know I love you more than what I should.
No one heard that, did they?
No.
Dean Richards joins us live from Channel 9 in the Wintrust Community Bank. Sorry, good morning, buddy.
I love the new version of my theme song.
Hey, we're going to send Andrea Darlis out to cover the Hamilton line and the people that are in line for the Hamilton tickets. Andrea, are you prepared to go cover?
I think so. I still can't believe that people are waiting in line all night. I mean, it's cool, and I want to see it too, but...
They've been there since the first person in line outside the Private Bank Theater got there at noon yesterday.
Yeah, me too. Are you going to use your celebrity status to get cut the line and buy tickets? Is that why you've agreed to do this?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I'm going to bring them deodorant and...
Okay.
Because it was hot yesterday.
It's hot today.
I better not get too close to the people in the front of the line.
Nah, they're sure they're lovely. Give them a hug. All right, you go call us.
All right, I'll call you.
See how fast you can get over there.
See you in a bit.
It's the way our founding fathers smelled.
That is true.
I'm guessing that the
8:13 Hamilton in Chicago with Smell Vision. The latest. Yes, what do you have for me?
Hamilton,
you have something, Dave?
Deodorant, Hamilton. What?
You held up a piece of paper, Dave, like you had something you needed
to add. Not till you go to traffic.
Oh, okay. Well, you're a little jumpy there. Let's go to Dean Richards, live from Channel 9. Oh, we already did. This is a bad story. What happened to Selma Blair?
She was returning home to Los Angeles from a vacation in Mexico with her 4-year-old son. Gets on the plane, according to witnesses on the plane. Just started screaming loudly that somebody's trying to kill her, somebody's trying to harm her. Witnesses on the plane say that they saw her mixing pills with wine. She was, they were midair when this was happening.
And her little kids with her.
Called down to the ground. Her 4-year-old child was with her at the time. And they removed her on a stretcher from the plane, was taken to a nearby hospital. She had gone on a weekend vacation with her 4-year-old to celebrate Father's Day with her ex. So, really, we don't know much more than that. Really kind of a...
Kiddo's okay, obviously. Somebody's with the kid.
Apparently the child is okay, as you can tell by the optimistic music that just played in the mm-hmm. background.
Yes. New Michael Jackson book out today. I didn't even know he was writing still.
He's very prolific, as many of the artists are after they pass away. This coming Saturday will have been the 7th anniversary of the death of Michael Jackson. Talk show host Tavis Smiley has written a book called Before You Judge Me, The Triumph and Tragedy of Michael Jackson's Last Days, focused on what may have caused Michael Jackson's death, what his life was like, his desire for privacy, the pressures of fame living under the public eye. The book, just out today, is already being developed into a television series by director J.J. Abrams.
What's he ever done? I'm actually just about finished with my 9-volume biography of Tito Jackson.
It's a story really that's not told.
No, and you wouldn't believe how difficult it was to come up with 9 volumes. Let me tell you that right now. But I've covered every aspect of his life from birth until yesterday.
And if people don't know, Steve has really dedicated his life to at least 5 to 9 volumes on each of the Jackson 5. So this is going to be like his 45th.
It's a lot of writing, story. But I'm dedicated. What can I tell you?
Yeah, the Marlin series was remarkable.
Well, you didn't talk about the Harpo. The Harpo was one of the best, too.
Was a good one also.
We'll come back, talk about David Crosby's lawsuit, Robert De Niro being in town, a bunch of Broadway stuff. And Sandberg, what do you have for me?
I have an engagement update conversation for you and Dean.
Okay, stand by for that. This your engagement or someone else's?
My engagement.
Apparently it's over. Stand by for Sandberg being back on the market.
Are people in line waiting to get tickets to Mary's engagement?
No, but to the wedding.
Oh.
Yeah, because none of us are invited. She's doing a lottery thing to pay for their trip.
You can travel Chicago. You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor. Channel 9720.
Back to Channel 9 where Dean is standing by. So why was Robert De Niro in town?
He is an investor in the new Nobu Hotel and Restaurant that'll be opening at the corner of Randolph and Peoria.
Well, we definitely need another hotel in town.
In the West Loop in Chicago. He was there. The mayor was there. All the...
Wait, this is Peoria and what?
Randolph.
What's on that corner now?
It's an empty lot right now, but it's right in the middle of Greektown over there.
Yeah, that's a weird place to put a boutique hotel, isn't it?
There's actually a couple of little...
But a Google and Facebook and everybody going over there. So, yeah, you're going to see a bunch of this, right?
Places over there, yeah. That's, you know, the area you know, shot up when Oprah went over into that neighborhood, kind of stabilized a little bit. But there's a lot of development over there. And
McDonald's is going down.
McDonald's is taking over the Oprah place because they know it can accommodate 25,000 Big Macs in that building.
Well, they're going to have to build a high rise there. And I still haven't gotten the answer to what's the zoning restrictions on how high a building can be there.
I was under the impression that a building couldn't be higher than the existing structure. Now, that may be
close. So, McDonald's, that's bad news for McDonald's corporate. That means they're cutting it to four people.
They're going to try to run the whole building just like a drive-through. You've got some business with them, pull up.
Pull around to the window and pick up a franchise.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know that building is, that used to be the Fred Niles building, where a big advertising agency was, and the Monkees did their song, the video for their song Daydream Believer was mm-hmm. recorded in that building.
Daydream Believer and a homecoming queen?
Exactly.
Do you have any, did you have a chance to talk to Mr. De Niro? Do you know anyone that did?
I did not. He made a statement.
Oh, I'd love to go to that.
While he was there, nice little, corporate statement. If only I could remember what he said.
I know it's going to be beautiful. The design is terrific. I'm very, very happy with the whole project, and I look forward to coming back to Chicago to stay in the hotel from time to time.
A lot of people don't know that he will be working behind the counter. When you sign in, when you check into the hotel, it's going to be De Niro checking your ID. And you checking in with me?
Yeah, you talking to me?
You checking in with
me? You talking to me?
I don't see anybody else here. You must be checking in with me.
David Crosby suing somebody. What's that about?
No, he is. He was sued by somebody.
Over what?
He was driving his automobile in wine country mm-hmm. Last year and apparently hit a jogger and his son. He claims that he was blinded by the sun. The lawsuit.
Did he write a song about it?
No, he did not.
Sounds like a Crosby, Stills, and Nash song.
I was driving in wine country.
The sun hit my eyes and I ran over a couple of runners.
The lawsuit claims that Crosby had injected, quote, alcohol and or prescription drugs and or non-prescription drugs and or other intoxicants and hallucinogens.
Ingested or injected?
Ingested.
Yeah, because if he's injecting all that, that's weird.
That's what the lawsuit says. Crosby says that he was not drinking. Very important to point out his point of view. He says he was not drinking. He was simply blinded by the sun. But there was a settlement on this yesterday, $3 million.
He's
paying him $3 million.
How about Stills and Nash? Did they chip in?
Stills and Nash are going to be okay, little Tommy.
What'd you say, Samber?
I was saying that sun is blinding, whether you're drunk, sober, high. Sun can be blinding to all of us.
I'll reveal Sandberg's route home later today so that none of you can be run over by her.
And it causes traffic delays, I'll have you know.
Yeah, it did this morning. Mm-hmm. It's so weird to have bright sunlight at 5 a.m.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me that if I'm driving and the sun gets in my eyes, I may be blinded and could cause a traffic problem?
No. If you're blinded by sun, you can run over joggers. Yeah, that's what the whole whole David Crosby thing's all about.
This is a very educational show today.
I'm telling you.
And it causes travel times to go way up.
Well, it's like deja vu. Didn't that just happen?
Good job security for Mary.
Thank you.
Yes. All right, so the biggest stars of Broadway, they did the Dionne Warwick thing?
Yeah, I love this.
I do too. It's nice.
Because, really, there's such a focus on Broadway right now. After the Tony Awards last week, they're very, really beautiful presentation that they did on the day of the Orlando shootings. So about 50 of the biggest stars on Broadway got together last week, got into a recording studio. Remember, just like We Are the World, where they got in and they recorded that song. This group got together and sang the old Bacharach and David song, What the World Needs Now is Love. It's an absolutely beautiful version. Here is just a little of it.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love. Just for some, but for everyone.
Lord, we don't need another mountain.
Who are we listening to, Dean? Who are some of the stars?
Some of the voices that you've heard so far. Carole King, Gloria Estefan, Nathan Lane, Matthew Broderick, Sean Hayes, Sarah Bareilles, Bernadette Peters.
Wow.
Tommy Toon is part of this. Literally, it's a who's who of Broadway in this. And they're selling this song with 100% of the proceeds going to the GLBT Community Center of Central Florida. They are directly working with survivors of the tragedy, with families of those who lost people in the tragedy.
So they're keeping the money local in Orlando.
Keeping the money local and 100% of the proceeds.
Nice.
You can buy it at BroadwayRecords.com, or it's on iTunes today as well. And the whole thing is just beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, it's well done.
So really, really nice job. But the big story locally is Hamilton. The ticket's going on sale this morning at 10 o'clock. Private bank theater box offices where you don't pay a service fee, but that's where the line is, you know, literally going around the block. It's like a four-block-long line right now. You can purchase them at the BroadwayInChicago.com or Ticketmaster. You can purchase them on their ticket line as well. There's a six-ticket-per-purchase limit on that, and I suspect that they're going to sell out, you know, pretty quickly. When the tickets will go on sale at 10 o'clock this morning, ranging $65 to $180. Steve, the seats that you like are going for $500
a piece. I like to be on stage, like right in the middle of the show-stopping tune.
Steve is has agreed, because when he does that set on stage, he is going to wear a powder wig and a tri-cornered hat.
I haven't said where the wig will be. Could be on any part of me.
So of course, that's going on today. Just everybody be careful when you're buying your tickets today. If you don't buy them at the official places, counterfeit tickets are everywhere for this show. Be very careful when you're purchasing your tickets on
this. All right. Sandberg, what's your update? What's your update on your engagement?
Yeah.
All right. We don't know what the update is because she just – and by the way, Andrea will be – no, we don't tease something and not do it. Come back in here and tell me what your update is. Andrea is standing by. She's going to be at
Monroe Street.
The
theater, the Private Bank Theater.
Hamilton tickets.
18 West Monroe. Is that what you're
about
to say?
You got the entire community waiting for your update. What's your update?
Well, you know, Dean and you had so graciously offered to be in my wedding, and I declined very quickly. Mm-hmm.
A little too fast, really.
I know. Mm-hmm. And so we had posted the segment on WGNRadio.com because that's what we do with all A-plus material.
Mm-hmm.
And people have been contacting me saying that they'd be happy to have you and Dean in their weddings.
Oh, really?
Since I'm not interested.
Since you turned us down.
Well, that's interesting.
Yes. So I can go ahead and connect you all.
Why don't you screen some of those for us, and we'll take that up post-show.
All right. So
that'd be great.
I think people really need to understand what Steve and I do when we go to weddings.
Ruin them?
Before.
Basically just ruin them.
Again, powder wig, not necessarily on his head.
That's what you got to remember.
Have to remind you about this?
That's what you got to remember, people. All right. Thanks, buddy.
Bye.
Talk to you later. Andrea, live from the line for Hamilton tickets next.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I'm past patiently waiting. I'm passionately smashing every expectation. Every action's an act of creation. I'm laughing in the face of casualties and sorrow. For the first time, I'm thinking past tomorrow.
When I am not going to away my shot. I am not going to away my shot.
You know, cool can get you interested enough to learn about something. And Hamilton was one cool character in the founding days of the greatest nation on earth, the United States of America. But Dave, did you know that if not for a sex scandal, maybe America's first sex scandal, Alexander Hamilton might have well been president of the United States?
Tell me more, Steve.
Well, it seems he was diddling with someone he shouldn't have been diddling with. And the diddling went on for a while, for a couple of years. It eventually was used against him. Everything was done to letter writing then.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would write a letter to you and say, "Dear sir, I don't know why I'm a Southern gentleman now.
No.
I know that you've been diddling where you shouldn't have been diddling."
I think it's the foghorn leghorn thing kicking in again.
Kicked it again. Well, you know me and my man of 1,000 voices, yeah. Minus 997.
Mm-hmm.
So because of the sex scandal, he was not in a position to run. Now he can do anything he wants.
Absolutely.
Which is why Hamilton tickets are so hot.
So did someone write a letter to TMZ to tell them about that?
Yeah, but back then it was only T.
Right.
Yeah, they didn't have the M or the C. Andre Darlis is live in the Hamilton line. Are you meeting other people?
I am meeting some really interesting, fun, cool people. And they all smell pretty good, considering the one guy, the guy who was first in line, his name's Vernon.
Mm-hmm.
He's been here since 11 o'clock yesterday. And surprisingly, Steve, he's not doing any more interviews right now.
Wait, he turned down interviews? That's yeah, tremendous. Does he have a publicist?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I don't know anything about diddling going on down here. But, yeah, so Vernon got here yesterday at 11 o'clock. And guess what the reason why? Of course, to buy tickets, but for...
Beat the traffic.
In-laws.
No, he's buying tickets for who?
For his in-laws. How cute is that?
Oh, he's in trouble at home. He's totally in trouble at home.
Yeah, I think there's got to be more to that story. That might be why he's not doing interviews anymore. But all these people, the funniest part is, I guess, how they occupy their time. Because, yeah, we all know many have been here since yesterday, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3 o'clock. So they stayed overnight. They have their little bags here, their little chairs, and they set up, one group set up these old-fashioned card tables. Remember how you used to set up the card tables and eat your dinner on them, Dave?
Sure.
You know, back in the day.
I did as well.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah, we had a card table. Yeah, we had a card table, sure. High quality, cost about $8, I think.
Yeah, they have these little card tables, and there's card games going on here. There's a Jenga game going on. They actually have designated people running and getting them. Again, this would be a great gig. You want to make some extra money, college kids or high school kids.
I was going to say, don't these people have jobs?
Yeah, yeah. How are all those people? Are these retired folks? Are these folks are unemployed? They're taking vacation time to do this? What are you hearing?
You know what? I'll be honest with you. Most of them are younger. They look college age students. One lady did say she took the day off work, though. I just spoke with her. I didn't ask Vernon. I couldn't get to that point yet with Vernon on whether or not he actually had a job.
Well, you'll crack the ice with Vernon as time allows.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, we'll be fast friends. He'll probably be on tomorrow with us.
All right, so if someone is considering still coming down to get tickets, would you say the line is long enough now where it's a pointless exercise?
It is. I mean, quite honestly, if you want to wait in line, if that's your thing, I don't like to wait in line really for anything.
Mm-hmm.
But the line goes... Literally, it's around the entire city block. So it goes west down Monroe and then north to Dearborn and then wrapping back around Madison. So literally, it circles the Inland Steel Building in this entire block and then goes for a little bit further than that. So you're going to be waiting for a while. And this is only for the run. I'm sure it's going to be extended, but this is for the performances from September 27th to March 19th.
All right, well, that's a lot of shows. So you could still come down and get in line, but you're going to be in line forever.
Right, but I think a lot of these people, the people in the very front of the line, wanted to be at the very first performance.
Sure.
So that's their goal. Everybody else, I think, is just going to be happy with whatever they get if they get good seats. But it's funny to watch the interaction between people of all, you know, races and sexes and sexual orientations, and they're all standing here with this big... I guess it would be like a Hamilton playbill, but it's this giant one, and they're all looking at performances. So I think some are making friends, deciding, well, if they go in on tickets together, maybe they can share a group, you know, like share a block of tickets. It's very funny just to watch the interaction.
Maybe that's what we need to do. Just get Trump and Hillary supporters in line for tickets for Hamilton, and we'll all get along. Maybe not. All right, I'll see you back here.
That's a bad idea. All right, I'm heading back. Anybody want anything besides Hamilton tickets?
No, just pick up those. Thanks. 847. Nice job by Andre Darlis, live from the line for Hamilton. And again, Dave will be giving away his tickets on the air coming soon.
I'm not going to do that. What's the longest you've ever waited in line for anything? Ever. Ever. Have you ever?
I'm not a big fan of that.
I know that.
Yes. Disney with the kids.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah,
but now they have the fast pass. So if your kids, you know, for when you take Abigail Grace, you'll just get a fast pass. You'll get go wherever you want.
Well, because she's cuter than all the other kids, they'll just put her in the front of the line.
They don't do that, Steve. Good luck.
Abigail gets a cute pass.
Okay.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own.
You are listening to Station WGN.
$8.53 now, and all four sensible, frankly weak, gun law changes were shot down in the Senate last night to nobody's surprise. And the continuing gutless work of the United States Congress goes on as Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, will allow the House to go into their summer break. Oh, God, they need it. They've had it so rough. And the House will go home without even considering anything. Yesterday, there were four gun measures in total. Senate leader and a good friend of mine, Mitch McConnell, if you heard the interview, I think Mitch is very close to me, suggested Democrats are simply using the issue as political talking points and said the two GOP measures sponsored by Senator Cornyn and Senator Grassley are real solutions. Those, by the way, both of those guys are Republicans. For the Republicans to accuse the Democrats or the Democrats to accuse the Republicans of playing politics, I mean, that's one of those how stupid do you think we look moments. Of course, you're all playing politics. Meanwhile, one of the most reprehensible people ever to serve in Congress, Democratic Senator Harry Reid, I'm actually in agreement with him. He called the Republican measures political stunts. Meaningless. Just looking to be able to tell people, yeah, we tried. Democrats have said the GOP is out of step with the American people. The polls seem to indicate that to be true. Last week, 61% of those surveyed in an NBC poll supported stricter gun laws. 38% opposed them. When it comes to the terror watch list, 90% of people said, yeah, that nobody on the terror watch list ought to be able to buy guns. 85% of NRA members in a recent poll said they agree with it as well. Yet, here's what happened. The Senate did not schedule a vote on assault bans. That wasn't expected. But the first effort was sponsored by Republican Grassley. Would have called for research on the causes of mass shootings and increased funding for background checks in the system that needs funding, although it would not have expanded the types of gun sales that require them. In other words, completely pointless and completely toothless. It was voted down 53-47. All of these measures needed a 60-vote threshold because of the filibuster break the other day with Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut. This is a guy that was elected to the Senate just weeks before the Newtown shootings, where little children, 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds, were shot and killed. And the gutless Congress of the United States did nothing then. Well, Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut, Newtown in Connecticut, wanted a new law expanding background check requirements to include private sales and sales over the Internet. This, to me, is as much a no-brainer as the terror watch list. It wasn't even close. It lost 56-44. And one of the reasons that it lost is because gutless cowards like Marco Rubio said it would be too much of a hassle and too big of a hurdle for legal gun owners to have to deal with. Based on what's going on in the country, you mind an extra step or two to make sure that, you know, the gun you're buying is okay? That you're legal? That's all they're asking for. And they use examples that continue to come up. Hey, if my brother wants to sell me a gun, the government shouldn't be involved. Grow up. The system needs to be changed. The third, sponsored by Senator Cornyn, a Republican, would allow federal law enforcement officials to delay gun sales to suspected terrorists. Good idea. Including those on the watch and no-fly lists for 72 hours. But the stunning thing here, Dave, after 72 hours, even if the background check's not cleared, you can buy the gun. It also failed, 53-47. And the final, the one that got the most press from Senator Dianne Feinstein of California, would have allowed the Attorney General to halt sales to suspected terrorists and allow individuals to appeal to the Department of Justice if they are denied a firearm. The biggest BS you're going to hear all day about this story, and in general, is that there are too many people on the terror watch list who are erroneously put there who wouldn't be able to buy a gun because of mistakes made. I mentioned this stat earlier, but there are 1 million people on the terror watch list, plus or minus a few.
Mm-hmm.
Of those 1 million people, 5,000 are Americans. That's 0.5%. Less so. It's 0.5%. 0.5%. 99.5% of the people aren't even in the discussion for this. And if you assume 10% of the 5,000 are mistakes, and frankly, it wouldn't be that high, that means 50 people. 50? No, it used to be 500. 500. 500 people could be affected by this, and they would have had a direct access route to clear their name off the terror watch list, which they should want to do anyway if it was a mistake.
Yeah.
So in other words, the Republican BS continues. It's all NRA funded. In the state of Illinois, Senator Durbin voted for all those, the two Democratic gun measures. I don't know how he voted on the Republican ones, to be honest. I know Senator Kirk voted for both Democratic measures as well. And Senator Kirk's in a very tough reelection race, but he's standing up because he's got to look at himself in the mirror. As far as those up for reelection around the general area, Dan Coats is up for reelection in Indiana, Ron Johnson in Wisconsin, and as I mentioned, Kirk here. But the biggest NRA contribution getter, to invent a word, is Joni Ernst in Iowa, who, as of last year, had received $3.5 million directly or indirectly from the NRA. So nothing but frauds, but I guess I shouldn't be surprised if children get murdered and Congress doesn't do anything. Well, it's not a big surprise. You're not helping the situation after gays and lesbians are murdered. That's your gutless Congress update. It's 8:58. We're back after this on 720 WGN on the Wintrust Community Bank Hour.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Bump's getting it done today. Music of my people. So you can find me a little Morris Day and the Time Jungle Love before we're done. It's 9:10 in the morning. The Steve Cochran Show continues. Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. You can still get answers in on the text question. Text question at Cochran Show at Facebook.com. Steve Cochran Show is how you get to me on social media. But the text question, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. The phone number as well. Here's the text question. If not Trump, who? Had 1,000 people on a conference call the other day going, we need to change the rules of the RNC and change the rules so it's possible that Donald Trump wouldn't have the 1,237. He has about 1,400 now in delegates, and therefore somebody else could step in. Okay, so I like the plan. Who? Who would be your person to replace Trump? Now, I've had some good answers earlier, Dave, as you know. Mm-hmm. The number to call again or text again is 312-981-7200. I think Colin Powell's a legitimate suggestion. Condoleezza Rice. Mitch Daniels, a former governor of Indiana. These are all good. Suggestions that aren't so good. Otto the inflatable autopilot from Airplane. But your suggestions are welcome at 312-981-7200. Sandra, come in here for a second. Andrea should be back any moment. She was down talking with the people in line at the Hamilton ticket line. And Vanderbilt, I need you to weigh in on this as well, live from the seventh floor. I'm seeing lots of pictures of dudes of all ages in ripped jeans. Are ripped jeans for men back? And I mean like really ripped, like shredded. Like it looks like you were attacked by a Wolverine jeans.
I don't know if they're back. I don't think they ever really left. They're back kind of, aren't they, Mayor?
Yeah, they're very... You know, high-end denim, which has a lot of fading and tears and things, has been a thing for like 7 or 8 years now.
As long as the boxers aren't hanging
but
out.
But I haven't seen them ripped to this extent.
Yeah, they're pretty ripped. And the ironically,
giant holes and shreds. And
yeah, the more ripped they are, the more expensive they are because it was more work to make them that way.
Could you just buy them and then throw them outside on the street and run over them with a car a few times?
I suppose you could do that.
Toss them to your local dog?
You know, the torn jeans is a topic of conversation at our house because I have some, and I don't think it's Pat's favorite look. And he made the comment after I wore them to a school thing at Patrick's school. He said, "Do you think those are appropriate?" Which... And that never is
there
going
to
go over.
There is no win. Men, make a note of this. There is no win for you to comment on the woman in your life's appearance or what she chooses to wear unless it's a compliment.
And
there's no win.
And just wait for this, the follow-up. I said, yes, that's why I wore them. And then he said, my girlfriend in high school used to wear torn jeans.
Oh, good call. So a double winner.
Double.
Yeah. Nice job, Pat. By the way, we had a meeting yesterday. Okay, it wasn't really a meeting. But in discussing, after you marry Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet, and your name becomes Mary Boyle?
Yeah.
I don't think I can call you Boyle.
No. I don't.
Boyle doesn't sound right. No. And I really wasn't crazy about just calling you Sandberg. That seems odd, too. So I think we're going to go with MB.
Are we?
Yeah, I like MB.
I don't
you know
mind
why?
Sandberg. What?
MB means business.
MB means business. Uh-huh. MB financial.
And so does Mary Boyle. Yeah. Mary Boyle
I
means
am
business.
All business.
What the hello?
I
That's
know.
What I'm saying.
That is actually what I am.
Yeah. MB is Mary Beth, too. Are you Mary Elizabeth?
No, I'm Mary Heather.
Oh, Mary Heather.
My parents were hippies. So.
Call her Mary Heather. I like that.
Mary Heather.
Oh, that's not bad.
Heather.
Cool.
Dave, that's not bad. It's my name.
It goes with
I'm talking about an option for him.
I don't have to, listen, I don't have time to say Mary Heather. This Mary is a Heather. Very busy show.
Because you can't say it angry.
That's pretty. Mary Heather.
Mary Heather.
Mary Heather,
just
Heather.
Mary Heather, get in here.
Yeah, oh, come hither.
I can't go. There's
what about
like,
just Heather? Heather sounds blonde to me.
There are so many Heathers when I was growing up that everyone was Heather B, Heather R, Heather S. Like, there's too many.
Okay, Heathers. Then you're MB. MB means business.
I'm not sure, though.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, in the end, it's not your choice.
This is
what your name is went out the window. But we'll work it out.
The big decision is if I'm going to go... Because I'm 40, I feel this is Mary Heather Boyle, Mary Sandberg Boyle. I don't know. You know, there's a lot here. Because I'm not going to change my email address because I've been getting Mary Sandberg emails.
I got to be honest with you. It's not even worth marrying Pat at this point. There's too many decisions. I like Pat, but come on. It's 9:15. I've got three things for you in the news, Dave. Three things for you to know. You know, the Brexit thing coming up on Thursday?
Yes.
The British nationals who are hoping to leave the European Union and become England once again. There are Texas nationalists who are supporting that because these are the people that want Texas to secede from the Union.
Mm-hmm.
You know what they're calling theirs now?
Texit. Texit.
It's the dumbest name ever. Texit. Sounds kind of like text it. Mm-hmm. Every time you say it, somebody's going to go, what do you want me to text you? Texit. Not a good plan.
No, I don't think so.
Not a good plan. Thing number two, have you ever engaged in road rage?
To be perfectly honest.
That's not what I'm looking for. Yes, so perfectly honest, of course.
Well, I've never gotten in a fight or anything, but have I ever?
But as a human being, certainly all of us have been upset.
Yes, I've gotten upset with other motorists who have been inconsiderate and rude. And
you ever flip them off? Give them the old bird. Tweet, tweet!
Let's just say I've made gestures.
Shake an angry fist?
Or shake my...
I'll get you.
Shake my head. Like, what's wrong with you?
An angry sigh? Mm-hmm. Like, ugh, you're very disappointing to me.
And then my wife is quickly saying, don't look at them. Don't look at them. They might pull out a gun.
The flipping of the bird, the fingering...
Which is true, people, by the way.
Yeah, it is true. Nobody looks dumber than when they do that. First off, you're mad, so you look ridiculous when you're mad.
Yep.
And then you give them this... You look ridiculous.
You do. Look completely stupid. I don't do that.
Yeah. I have been that mad as well. I've even taken it so far as to gun the car. I haven't done this recently, you know, where you come right up behind somebody, and then somehow something clicks in your brain. You go, really? Jackass, you want to make it worse now? Just drop back and just let this fool go on about their way. The reason I'm bringing this up is, you know, in all the driving I do, because, you know, I got the double-wide in East St. Louis.
Right. It's a long commute.
I see a lot of cars on the road, and I'm telling you, and I've said this before, in the last 10 years, I see more women losing it than men. Women, solo female drivers going nuts.
And driving really aggressively.
Driving aggressively, but then feeling like they were cut off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've told this story on the air, but and it's a longer story, so I'll shorten it. But a woman cutting me off at like 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning in my giant SUV at the time with her Mercedes and screaming at me. She doesn't know who I am. She doesn't know, you know, whether I'm nuts. You know, just crazy. So is it really that big a deal? I mean, move on. Just move on. Let's go to Mountain Lake Terrace, Washington, where police are investigating a road rage situation. A family says a driver rammed their car as they got off the freeway to avoid him. Then got out of his vehicle with a knife, came up to their car, you ready? And stabbed their car.
Stabbed the car?
Yeah.
Like the tires?
No.
The car.
The window?
The metal in the windows. And then got back in his car and drove away. Of course, everyone in the car had a phone. They took a picture of his license plate, and he was arrested. Is it really that upsetting to you? Come on. Come on, people. Seriously. Give it some thought. Think before you're that stupid. Oh, and speaking of stupid, Time Magazine has a story out. This would be thing number three. Your smartphone's making you stupid. Your smartphone, you become more and more dependent on your smartphone. You know, we'll post this to Twitter and Facebook because it's an interesting piece. But the general premise here is when you become more and more dependent on technology and less dependent on you, you become dumber.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, I promise you, I knew every phone number ever. It was just one of those things that stuck to my head. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you my own phone number now. because it's all in my phone. I was never great with directions. Like, I could walk north and I'd think I'd be going south. I just didn't have that chip installed in my brain. So I probably needed the GPS thing, but now I'm really dependent on GPS. Like, you know, we've been back for 675 shows. I use GPS to get from the parking lot to the studio, you know, and I do the walk twice a day, every day. So your smartphone is making you stupid. And there's concern about this on every level, to the point where the United States Naval Academy is now teaching sailors how to navigate with sextants, S-E-X-T-A-N-T-S, which is an ancient way of navigating the sea. The idea being, if Chinese hackers come in and take out your communications, your computer communications, you'd still be able to navigate your ship.
Do you remember planning a trip, planning a vacation, and you would sit down at the kitchen table
with
the night before with a map?
Yeah.
And plan out your route.
I remember stopping by the side of the road, unfolding the map on the trunk of the car, looking at the map, and then arguing about folding the map back up.
That's right. And you could never fold it exactly the same way.
Or you stop at one of the road, the exits, the oases, are called different things in different states, and you go in and they have the giant map behind the plexiglass, yes. And you go in and you go, okay, we're here. Mm-hmm. We got to get to there. And you'd look for roads.
You know, it's the same argument that you heard when calculators first came on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
If you use calculators, you're not going to be good at math anymore.
I think that's true.
I do think it's true.
Yeah. You think about all the things your smartphone is doing that might make you more efficient, but it's making you stupid. Now, perfect timing. Bennett just walked out. Bennett's a millennial.
Yes.
Bennett's a very bright young man.
Mm-hmm.
However, Bennett and his millennial generation, they know nothing other than smartphones. Bennett, sit down and take your punishment.
I guess my timing probably could not have been worse.
Bennett, do you know how to navigate with a sextant?
No.
You should.
I guess.
Bennett, is your handwriting hideous?
Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
Yeah, because you were never taught how to do proper handwriting, and all you do is keyboard, right?
However, the one justification I will put on our education is...
Dave, remember the study, millennials make excuses? Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead, Bennett.
Yeah.
We do have calculators everywhere we go. When all of our math teachers said you will not have a calculator wherever you go, that is one fact that is true to this day, that we said, I don't know about that.
So you think there is calculators everywhere you go?
I have a calculator everywhere I go.
Let me give you a scenario.
You use them in a test, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, so what the heck?
Well, here's the problem. Let's say Bennett is kidnapped and there's a ransom demand that I have to meet.
Mm-hmm.
And that ransom demand involves math. Well, A, you're not going to have your phone to write, help me, Steve. And secondarily, you're not going to know how to do the math to let me know how much the ransom is.
Yeah. If I didn't have my phone, you'd have to give me at least 15 minutes and, you know, a pencil and paper. But by that time, it's a lot more...
But all of your generation, because you're so dependent on technology, we never even taught you how to do stuff.
I'm not too proud of it.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to fix it.
I don't believe that. And watch out for kidnappers.
He made a Starbucks run for us a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. I gave him my smartphone so he could have a way to find the Starbucks.
Yeah, that's a good call.
You're very, very hesitant about it, too.
Well, I'm with everybody. I am with everybody else. Look, there's nothing like the convenience of all the things that technology bring, but accept the fact that all of us are dumber because of it. It's 9:23. There's your three things. We're back after this on 720 WGN. It's 10 o'clock when Bill and Wendy are here. I'm going to go down to the Hamilton line to do a little dance party. Get the whole line doing this.
A lot of people down there.
9:27. Andrea's exclusive interview with Vernon, the first guy in line in a moment first. Texters are trying to tell me who should be the replacement for Trump. Alan B. West is one of the suggestions. Remember Alan West, the congressman?
I do remember him.
Yeah, he was back in 2012, made a lot of noise. He was an Army vet and also a former congressman. Mike Ditka.
That would be good.
Could be time for the coach.
Yeah.
Hardcore Republican.
It's been suggested before.
Yeah. Charles Krauthammer, but he'd be too smart to take the job from a 312 texter.
I like some of his writing, yeah.
Mickey Mouse looks good, according to a 6-3-0. And another 6-3-0 says Mitch Daniels. The problem is political races are so sleazy, the best candidate shy away. Mitch Daniels and Colin Powell have both, in the past, taken a look at it and then backed off. And in both cases, it seemed to be some family pressures as well.
You know, I know whoever said Mickey Mouse, I'm hoping is kidding, but it'd be interesting to see the popularity numbers. Who has the higher results, Trump, Hillary, or Mickey Mouse Oh, sure, I think it'd be Mickey Mouse. Yeah.
Mickey in a landslide.
Yeah, big time.
All right, so tell me about your friend Vernon.
All right, Vernon Esmond was the first person in line yesterday. Yesterday. Think of that. He's been in line almost 24 hours to get Hamilton tickets. And this is a little bit of what Vernon had to say.
First man in line, huh?
Oh, yeah.
What made you decide to wait in line for how long?
Since 11:30 yesterday.
How come?
Because my lady asked me to. her parents are celebrating their 25th, I think it is, anniversary later in the year, and she wanted to make this an anniversary gift to them, and she couldn't be here, so.
You know what a great son-in-law you are? You have brownie points for life.
Good, that's what I'm sure going to need them, especially if somebody mentioned Alexander Hamilton's name to me one more time.
Vernon, where are you from?
I'm from here in Chicago.
Okay, very nice, very good. And let me ask you, what did you do if you had to eat or maybe use the restroom?
The people have been very friendly and very warm all night. And there's a hotel, there's a Hilton right down the street, and then there's 7-Elevens, there's McDonald's. It was quite nice. I mean, by the weather cooperating, it wasn't bad.
That's my man Vernon.
How
Vernon sounds
great
like
a, is he?
Vernon sounds like he's a jazz man.
Let
me tell you, if I hear Alexander Hamilton one more time, I'm gonna hit somebody.
Ask me what he was wearing.
I would guess a black suit.
He was wearing a tan suit. He had taken the jacket off, but he had a kind of a lavender color shirt. I was gonna say blouse shirt, but then a multicolored tie. And the tie was perfectly knotted, wasn't loose. You know, figure you're standing there for, 24 hours? Kept the tie on, great shoes.
How old is he?
I would say Vernon, maybe mid-50s, mid to late 50s.
But he said my wife's parents are celebrating their 25th. Vernon Robin the Cradle?
He might be.
I married a young wife and I want to keep her happy.
Maybe I'm being generous. Maybe he was 60-ish.
Oh, she told me to go downtown. I said right away.
He was great. And I interviewed some of the other kids, students in the line. They were there with mom and dad. One was with her mom. They were there since they got there at midnight. So cool. How funny is that?
Cool bonding until the kid goes, oh, this sucks.
They were wrong.
Can you just wait, Mom?
Yeah, I know. And then, of course, there was a section. This kind of made me mad. But they're in line like everybody else. Amanda and Margie were down there. Margie Koroshek says hello, by the way. And Amanda Meyer from Broadway in Chicago. And they were showing me different people, you know, who had been there the longest and different interviews. And I started to walk over to this gentleman. She said, don't go over to him. He's a ticket scalper.
So, well, sure. That's part of the territory.
Yeah, they wait in the line. Yeah. Exactly. So,
well, nice job.
It was fun.
9:31, quick break. Back with a big story right after this.
Well, I got me a five. The old fiddle, when the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the griddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy.
9:44. Standing by, my friend Orion Samuelson. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning to you. It's been interesting hearing all the talk about tickets coming up, because there's another opportunity to get tickets. I don't know how many people will stand in line, but Farm Aid 2016 tickets will go on sale Monday. That's next Monday. Price is $49.50 to $189.50. That's pale by comparison to Alexander Hamilton.
Well, great shows, too. And I don't even know how many years it's been, but is John Mellencamp and Willie Nelson still involved?
Board members of the Farm Aid, Willie Nelson, John Mellencamp, Neil Young, and Dave Matthews. They'll all be involved. Tim Reynolds, as well as Sturgill Simpson, Alabama Shakes, Nathaniel Ratliff, and the Night Sweats, Jamie Johnson, Margot Price, Lucas Nelson, and Promise of the Real, and Carlene Carter, and Insects versus Robots.
It'll That's one of your place. Favorite bands, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have them in my CD
Weren't
player
you in
the
a
car.
Band?
The
Insects versus.
Rose? I was in a band called Insects versus the Exterminator.
Ah,
yeah. Yeah, it was a precursor. They did not, claim Steve in that. But,
precursor.
Anyway, it'll be outside Washington. It will be at the Jiffy Lube Live in Bristow, Virginia. And
by the way, it's not actually a Jiffy Lube, that's the sponsor name of the venue.
I guess it is. Yes. So you may want to send Andrea out there to talk to people in line. You never know.
I might do that.
It'll be funny if you go and Vernon's in line there, too.
Buying tickets. Did you hear that, Orion? For his in-laws.
I heard him.
24 hours almost in line, this poor guy.
It sounded like it was at the threat of death. So.
Hey, I got a farm question for you, my friend.
All right.
A lot of the talk on gunless legislation involved the fact that the House hasn't granted new funding on guns and the damage they can do. And how to do things better in regards to the fact that we have 310 million guns in this country. But there's an agricultural research gap that's gone on, I think, longer than anything. And there's a kid at ISU who's trying to push for it, and that is federal funding into research to try to help farmers figure out how to max their land while they can.
Several studies are underway to do that, and, of course, hunting and fishing rights are part of the income for many farmers in what we call recreational land, not the best land for farming. Our farm, for example, in Wisconsin, where I grew up, would have been considered recreational property because we had 200 acres and only 90 of it was tillable. The rest was woods. The rest was up and down hills, great habitat for wildlife. I grew up with a .22 rifle. That's the only gun I had, but I used it for squirrel hunting and rabbit hunting, and it is an area of income that farmers can look at, and quite a few in that type of farmland have been doing it now for quite a while.
Of course, we've talked about this briefly before, but Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton have shown no interest in really talking to farmers and talking about farming going forward, so apparently they've got plenty of food.
Apparently they do, and the areas where they have talked about it disturb me a great deal because Donald Trump doesn't like trade agreements. Hillary Clinton is wanting to change the one that's under consideration in the halls of Congress now that she favored while she was Secretary of State. But really, the only time I've heard them talk anything agriculture was when they were campaigning in the Iowa primary. And, of course, you have to because ethanol and biodiesel and all of the livestock produced in the state of Iowa, you have to try to show some knowledge. But, frankly, I would give them a rating of about 5% knowledge on agriculture. I don't think they know, and I don't think they care because the population that goes to the polls from farmers, not very large, but they forget that 20% of the jobs in this country are related to agriculture, either the research, the planting, the growing, the harvesting, the transporting, the wholesaling, the retailing, the processing. All of that is part of agriculture. And when you get into rural America and those smaller communities, they depend a great deal on the farming community around them to continue to exist. We've seen a big drop-off of small towns. My town was 527 people, and I don't think there are that many there today because just no job opportunities. So
right, and because of that, more people go to bigger cities or go to other areas. Of course, in the case of Illinois, you've got people just leaving the state.
Yes, I talked to a couple at the dairy breakfast in Hampshire last Saturday morning that said, "Hey, they were moving out because they just couldn't afford what was happening here." So
yeah, and it's too bad because right next door, Indiana has revived and thrived and is doing great. Even Michigan, with the mess they were in, Detroit has had a bit of a comeback.
Right,
Wisconsin's doing well.
And their governor is not liked a great deal, but yes, he's survived the re-elections and all that sort of thing. And financially, the state is pretty stable.
Right, and Iowa is certainly holding their own. All right, well, listen, thanks for the education, as always. And every time somebody sees me, he goes, "Hey, what's Orion up to now?" So what are you doing for the rest of your day?
For the rest of the day, I'll be working on the television show that we put together on Thursday for the RFD TV people. Max and I do that together, so I'll be working on video that we'll use because we had a great time Saturday morning at the farm in Hampshire.
Sure.
There were hundreds of people that were there. Some of them wanted to know what Steve Cochran was really like.
Yeah, you didn't tell them, did you?
No. Okay. Didn't tell him.
Well,
no,
you're a good friend, and I appreciate that.
A lot of good WGN listeners came out to breakfast that started at 6 a.m. on this past Saturday.
So. Or as farmers like to call it, lunch.
Very true.
Yeah, get started early. All right, buddy, thank you.
Okay, have a good week.
That's Orion Samuelson. We'll take a break, come back. Bill and Wendy on the way. You know, we still have time for you to jump in and tell us who you think should be replacing Trump. If Trump's going to go in the convention, what's your suggestion on who replaces him? 312-981-7200. But we haven't done Ask Steve in forever. So the phone number works, too. 312-981-7200. Anybody that wants to jump on, ask me any question about anything. I'd be happy to answer it or hang up on you. 312-981-7200 is the number for that as well. We're back after this on 720 WGN. And some prizes I give away, too, I suppose. How about tickets to see My Son, the Waiter? A Jewish Tragedy, playing at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts July 7th through August 7th.
Starring Bernie Sanders?
Funny. No, it stars Brad Zimmerman, okay. Bernie's nephew. And you can get tickets by phone at 847-673-6300 or online at northshorecenter.org. Let's go to the phone. Yes, Orville, how can I help you?
Yes, I think the Republicans have a proven, respectable, patriotic alternative to Donald Trump. And his name is John McCain.
You know, it's funny you say that, Orville. I actually thought about this. Who's the last Republican to really have the respect of the country going forward as opposed to, oh, that's the guy we picked? Even Mitt Romney, it was kind of, oh, that's the guy we picked. Orville, I like your suggestion. And McCain could come in, even at 79, McCain could come in and go, look, I'll do it for 4 years and I'm out.
I don't think he will. It's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
It's not a bad idea.
Sam, talk to me. What do you got, buddy? Thank you, Sam. I appreciate the phone call. Let me go to Mike on line three. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Let's go back. Regarding the Jake Arrieta nude photo shoot.
Naked Jake, yes.
I would be more concerned about him getting pop-ups.
What did I miss when I went to Hamilton? Jake Arrieta is naked? What?
No.
Larry's on the phone. Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Yo, let's get Judy in there. She'll kick Clinton's butt.
Who are we putting in?
Judge Judy.
Judge Judy.
I thought you meant Kathy and Judy.
Let me tell you something. Everybody vote for Judge Judy because they're afraid of her. Again, some people on the show are big winners. Jake and Sandberg will be giving out those prizes now. And thanks to Bennett as well for being sober this morning.
I missed the Bennett interview, too.
A lot going on.
But I made a lot of new friends in line at Hamilton.
Final suggestions for people to replace Trump: Jeff Daniels, Bob Dole, the congressman.
Oh, yeah.
Bozo the Clown, Gary Johnson, the libertarian. Mitt Romney, come on back. Or the one we've all thought of, Nick DiGilio. Bill and Wendy are next.